Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, which today is Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators welcoming back John Hines and his first road trip as the head coach of the Minnesota Wild. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pre-game coverage starts right here at 6 o'clock. Joining us now is Sportsnet and 32 Thoughts podcast, Elliot Friedman. Elliot, appreciate you for joining us and appreciate you for making this program feel like celebrities in the hockey world, getting us a shout-out on the 32 Thoughts podcast a couple of weeks ago, and, of course, giving Willie a much-deserved shout-out on your 32 Thoughts article that just came out a couple days ago. Elliot, appreciate you for joining us.
My pleasure. I was glad to do it. And I have to say, Willie, I got some texts from people saying they like the idea. We'll see if it goes anywhere. Most of the stuff I put in my column, people roll their eyes and just throw it into the trash bin. We'll see if this one goes anywhere.
Can we call it the Donick Rule?
The Donick Rule. Oh, yes.
I definitely will. Like, if it goes in, it's the Donick. Like, somebody, like, you know, Toronto, I think, leads the league in too many men penalties. And if they get one against the Predators and Andrew Brunet says the best penalty killer, like TJ Brody, you're going to serve it, we'll just say Toronto got Donicked.
That's right.
You just got done.
There's going to be T-shirts and everything.
Willie is making his mark on the hockey world. And, Elliot, the Predators are absolutely red hot on a six-game winning streak. Philip Forsberg might be on the hottest streak of his career. UC Saros is now playing like a vintage UC Saros. How sustainable do you think this style of hockey and this win streak is for the Predators?
Well, you know what? I think any time, I don't know if I would say it's sustainable, but the one thing I've noticed about your team this year, Carolyn, it's very streaky. Like, they go through phases where they look really good, and they go through phases where things haven't looked. I mean, I think the last time we spoke, they were in like 30th or 31st place, right? But so what it says to me is it's still a team that's finding its way. That, you know, you have lots of good players in your lineup. You have some other guys who are finding their footing. You still have some holes here and there, you know, but the one thing I really noticed is that they are, like, Saros is getting back. You'll remember at the beginning of the year, he was really struggling and you guys were worried about him. Like, that has gone away. I just think that I like the fact they're competing. Like, when I watch the Predators, I think on most nights they play really hard. And I think if you're like that, you can control a lot of other things. But, you know, I bet that, you know, while you're enjoying the ride right now, you just got to avoid the valleys. And there have been a couple of valleys this year, and you got to make sure those don't happen again.
What do you think that is? Is that a product of new coach, new system, young players, all of the above?
I think it's the number one thing I think it is that you guys are plugging. Well, at the beginning of the year, I thought, you know, it was like just Saros wasn't to his level. And if he's not to his level, it's always going to be tough. Mm-hmm. But the second thing I think is, look, you last year, at the end of last year, you had some young guys who really took off. But it's a big difference. I think the hardest thing for a young player in the league, Carolyn, is to be good every night. Like, this is a hard league. It's tough. It's competitive. People are trying to run over you all the time. Nobody's going to play 82 good games. Like, you're going to have a few games a year where you're just not at your best. But can you get to 70 really good games? Can you get to 75 really good games? And I think it's a really hard thing to do. Like, one of the guys we've talked about is Parsonen. Like, Parsonen now is understanding what it's like to play against the best in the league every night at a very important position. And it's really a hard thing to do. So I think that's what it is. Like, anytime you have more and more young players being asked to move up a lineup and take bigger roles, there's going to be nights where they're just not going to be as good as they can be. And you have to limit those. And I think all these young guys, like Evangelista, I loved his quote the other day where someone asked him about getting the second in rookie scoring. He goes, I don't even want to talk about it because I've had bad nights. Like, I think that to me is a player who understands how hard this is And I think these guys are going to get there, and I think they're going to be better off for it, but it's harder than you think.
We'll talk with Elliot Freeman. You can listen to his podcast, the 32 Thoughts podcast, on your platforms. Now, Elliot, Philip Forsberg, we spoke on him yesterday and the season that he's having. And I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Willie and Caroline. Do you believe he's having the best start of a season of his career or this stretch he's been on? Do you think it's the best stretch he's had in his career?
I don't know that I would say that yet. I mean, he looks dynamite. But, like, I remember a couple years ago when he had that 42-goal year. Like, I remember watching him that season. I was like, Derek, holy smokes. Like, who's going to stop this guy? And he's getting there. The only reason I won't say yes is because I like to see it done for longer than 21 games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone's going to run to Forsberg and say that. He's going to think that guy up in Toronto, what a jerk off for saying that kind of thing. But, like I look at what he did for 69 games 2 years ago, and I'm like, to in this day and age, to score 42 goals and have 84 points the way Forsberg plays, that's impressive. That's really impressive. So my answer is not yet. It could be. I just want to see it go longer. But I think the thing is that, like, if Forsberg doesn't score, you guys are really going to have, I think, a much tougher time scoring. And I really admire the way he's come out to start the year. I would say that.
Now, I got a question about Coach Hines. Now, he's coming in back into Bridgestone for the first time, leading Minnesota Wild, who they're not doing well this season, but it's still early on. You hear in other sports where coaches, you know, they're very, very particular on jobs that they take. They may hold out a little bit longer because they don't want to take that necessary job that's available because it might not be a good job to take. And you may find yourself on the streets a little bit, you know, earlier than what you thought.
Yes.
Do coaches think that way in hockey? And I'm asking because, you know, Hines takes his job after, you know, what happened here in Nashville. And, you know, whether you liked him or not, I think he did the best job he could possibly do under the circumstances, especially last year. But you're taking over a Minnesota Wild team that is struggling, and they're struggling at one of the most important positions, and that's goalie. So do coaches think, you know, in regards to, is this the right job to take or not?
You know, Derek, they do, but I think what really happens is the question comes down to, do you have leverage, right? It's like almost any negotiation or almost any decision we all make in life. Do you have the leverage to afford to be picky or be choosy? And, you know, I think the thing is with John Hines is that I don't necessarily think it's his fault. It's just the reality of the situation. This is his third head coaching job in the NHL. There's a lot of guys who don't get three chances. There's a lot of guys who don't get four chances. And, you know, the one thing is and first of all, I'll say this. Like, whenever I spoke to John Hines about Nashville, he had nothing but great things to say about it. Like, people, and I've told you this before, people love Nashville. So that's the first thing I say. Now, John Hines, at the beginning of this year, he's working as a consultant with San Jose. There were some rumors that maybe he'd end up with the Islanders if they made a coaching change. But like I said, there's not a lot of guys who get a third chance, and there's not a lot of guys who get a fourth chance. And I think all of those things you brought up about Minnesota struggling are true. But I think the thing that really, really tips the scales for Hines in this case is that he knows the GM really well. Him and Bill Guerin, the GM of the Wild, they have a long history together, a very long history together. And I think there are times where you're sitting there and saying, how many more chances will I get? You're going to tip in the direction of somebody who you know and you trust. And I think that's exactly what happened in this case here. He's saying, I have a comfort level with Bill Guerin. I know this guy. I know, not that he was treated unfairly anywhere else, but I know I will be treated fairly by him. And I like the relationship. And I think, Derek, in this particular case, that played a very big role.
Elliot, I know what gets circulated a lot when a team makes a coaching change is the old adage, well, the first thing you look at, as Derek just alluded to, you look at the goaltender's save percentage and numbers and say, ah, there's where your coaching went wrong. But and it does seem like it's true to a degree, and that there's got to be part of that that was true in this case.
Yes. You know, there's a stat. There's a stat out there. It's like one of the hockey's advanced stats. It's basically expected goals above or below average. And what it means is, like, every team has a goal differential. This is, you score this many goals, you give up that many goals. The higher the positive differential, obviously the better team you're going to be. Now, there's also this thing called expected goals. And basically what that is they look at the quality of chances you give up and the quality of chances you get. And they basically say, this is how many goals you should be scoring, and this is how many goals you should be giving up. And based on those numbers, Edmonton is, I think, 24 goals worse than they should be, and Minnesota is 20. And they're the two worst teams in the league at that number. And that's a private stat that teams keep. There is some public domain discussion about it, but it's not like the teams are really quiet about it. But the public information indicates that Minnesota and Edmonton are the two worst teams this year at where they should be in goal differential compared to where they are. And that is two things, only two, or well, it could be three things. Number one, your goaltending is terrible. Number two, you're bleeding high quality chances. And number three, for whatever reason, you can't score. Like, those are the three reasons it happens. And in Minnesota's case, the goaltending has been a big issue, particularly when killing penalties. They have been bleeding goals, killing penalties, and it's a huge problem for them. And, you know, Alain Vigneault, who coached a whole bunch of teams, he used to have a great saying that I always remember, and he would always say it because, you know, he's French, and he would kind of, you know, butcher the English language a bit. He would say, if my goaler is better than your goaler, I win. And if your goaler is better than my goaler, you win. And sometimes you can simply reduce hockey to that. And this is one of those cases.
Remember a couple of weeks ago, I was telling you, I was asking you about Corey Perry and putting him on the list of villains. There's certainly been a lot of drama there since then. But, you know, Elliot, I'm just curious, when you follow a story like that where a team is in a position where they, you know, they probably would benefit from being transparent to a degree, but they have privacy issues that keep them from doing that, especially in a sensitive market like Chicago, where you have a big media throng and you have a controversial thing that happened before. What do you think of how all that went down the last few days?
Well, there's two things, first of all, I think about Willie. Number one is I always try to treat other people like I would want to be treated. So, you know, that's number one. And number two, you can't be wrong. Like, you know, like it's bad enough sometimes I get a trade wrong or I put a rumor out there. It's that's not true. That's bad. But this is real, real, real life. And you have to be careful about it. Now, I think there's a couple of things at play here. When Kyle Davidson met with the players on Tuesday morning to inform them that they were going to terminate Corey Perry's contract, you know, he told the players, you know, we cannot afford any bad behavior here. We can't afford any incidents because of what they went through in the fallout with the Kyle Beach situation. And I think that that's actually one of the big storylines that's still to come, guys, is that teams and players and agents, they're trying to find out what exactly happened. Because like when Shane Pinto was suspended for gambling, like there's a lot of hockey players who gamble. Not on hockey, they're not allowed to. You can get banned for life for that. But they gamble on other things. And they were calling around and asking for information. What do I have to know not to do so I don't get this suspension? And what the Players Association did was they said, look, we're not telling you exactly what happened with Shane Pinto, but we're going to tell you not to do this, 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 and this. And they appreciated that knowledge. And the same thing is happening now. They want to know exactly what happened here so that no other player does it and, you know, can have a contract terminated. And one of the questions a lot of people are asking is, and I don't know the answer, but I know it's being asked, is this something that Chicago is saying maybe this is not as big a deal as another organization would find it, but we have to see it as a big deal because of what we've been through. So that's, you know, and again, I'm not trying to minimize anything. I don't know exactly what occurred. I think there's definitely still some holes on what I've heard, but I'm not trying to minimize it in any way. At this point in time, there's nothing criminal here. So, but I think that's one of the questions that's getting asked. Where I thought it really got out of control was with the rumors about a teammate's family. And I understand sometimes in that situation, your lawyers or your HR people, they tell you don't say a word until the investigation is complete. I get it. But on another hand, you've got to have some kind of strategy where you can say to someone or get the message out there that, you know, like they waited basically 2 or 3 days to address the rumors that were going around. And that was just too long. It was too long. There had to be a strategy for we have to combat this. And, you know, I always say to young people getting into the business that when you get into sports media, you're a public figure and you're going to get a lot of criticism. And some of it will be fair because you make a mistake or you have a bad day on the air and you just have to eat that. But some of it, people are going to say things to you or believe things about you that they wouldn't have the guts to say to your face. Or you can't believe that anybody would say that about you. And sometimes it's about your appearance. Sometimes it's about your background. Like a lot of it's disgusting, obviously. And I think it shouldn't happen, but it does. And I think if you're a public figure, you have to accept that that's going to occur from time to time. What I didn't like here was that it happened to a private figure. And I thought something had to be done a day or two or three sooner to get out there and stop the message before it got as out of control as it did.
Derek asked a really interesting question on the show the other day, him being a former player rep in the NFL, and he said, if you're going to terminate somebody's contract, you know, there's a process, right?
Yes.
I haven't heard anything. Is Corey Perry going to fight this at all, or is he just going to accept the termination here?
Well, it's a great question, Derek, and, you know, I'll explain how it works in the NHL. So from the day that like you can always terminate a contract, the question, which Chicago did, but the question is, if the player grieves it, can you win? So from yesterday, when his contract cleared, Corey Perry had 60 days to decide if he wants to grieve it. Now, I'll give you, like, there have been a lot of cases where players have won grievances like this, or there have been settlements. Mike Richards, a player, he was terminated by the LA Kings, and there was a settlement. Evander Kane was terminated by the Sharks, and there was a settlement. We'll see if that happens here. But there was a player 4 years ago named Patrick Berglund who was terminated by the Buffalo Sabres, and the NHLPA wanted to fight it, but Berglund wanted no part of it. He was like, no, I'm done. I don't want – and it was like – I think it was like $12 million. He said, no, I'm done. I just want out of here. And so it comes down to what does the player want to do as opposed to what the player's union wants to do. You know, I think the other thing we're trying to figure out here is I think we'll hear from Perry at some point. I think he will release a statement at some point. But I think the thing everybody is trying to find out here is what exactly happened. Will he be able to resume his career somewhere else? And Derek, like, it's a $4 million salary. He already got $2 million of it in the summer as a signing bonus. So let's just say, for argument's sake, you know, does he sign somewhere else for say $800,000, and they make a deal where, you know, Chicago pays him what was left minus what he signs for, or do they just fight the grievance? He has 60 days to decide.
And that's what I wondered. Maybe he could just be waiting on whether he's with another team or not. And if he's with another team, then he's just going to forget about it. But if he's not, then you fight it. But I always look at the guys that that potentially can go through the same thing that he's going through. The PA is fighting that for him, but you're also fighting it for other guys that may be in this position.
Yes, and that is exactly it. And that is their responsibility as a Players Association. But I remember with that one with Patrick Berglund in 2018-19, I remember I heard behind the scenes, like, the player kept on saying no, no, no. And the Players Association was like, we really want to fight this. We have to fight it. But if the player says no, there's really, they felt there was nothing they could do.
All right, Elliot, before we let you go, another one of the top five all-time receiving boos from Nashville fans would be Patrick Kane. And now he's got a new home for Detroit. What version of Patrick Kane are we going to see here with the injury that he had, et cetera? Because it sounds like a really exciting story, but the Red Wings have to feel like he can still be some semblance of a game breaker.
Well, I think he'll be better than he was last year. Like, if you heard him talk yesterday, and I know he was on with TNT, and I watched his media conference that he had with a regular group of media, it's pretty clear he feels he can move a lot better than last season. Like, I'm not expecting him to be a 97-point scorer again, but I do think he will move better than he did last year. You know, the other thing, too, is, like, Yzerman, the GM, Steve Yzerman of the Red Wings, is one of the greatest players ever. And I really felt, and I know there were teams, like, he was, Kane was seating not far from me, where I live, and, you know, we weren't really allowed to go in there. But I know teams went to go see him. And I just have to think Steve Yzerman, being the great player he was, and I know he met with him face-to-face, I just don't think he takes a chance on him unless he thinks there's something there. And like I said, I'm not expecting what he was 3-4 years ago, but I think better than last year, and I think Detroit feels that can help him.
Elliot Friedman, appreciate you as always. We look forward to maybe yet another shout-out on your next podcast.
Well, you got to come up with a good idea, Carl.
Now it's a weekly thing.
You don't just
thing.
Shout at anybody. You got to come up with something good.
I get a taste of fame, and now I'm
addicted to it. You're craving it now. We'll see. I am open to bribery. I just want to let you guys know.
I'll call you after the show. We'll chat. Elliot, appreciate you as always. Thanks for your time.
Take care, guys.
All right. Thanks, Elliot. Appreciate you. Elliot Friedman, he is the very best. Join the Chase and Big Joe show live from the NASCAR Awards tomorrow at the Music City Center, brought to you by Green Trees Company Dispensary, providing high-quality legal THC products. Learn more at thegreentreescompany.com.